one shot at a time.
Welcome back to the Enjoy the Walk podcast, ladies and gentlemen. We must be new to Zoom because we started out with something completely foreign in our headphones. But for you guys that aren't foreign to us at the podcast, oh man, we are bringing you guys all kinds of recaps of the PGA Championship this week. Phil Mickelson getting an absolute historic win, something that was truly iconic, which we'll dive into. Storylines also coming out of the PGA Championship this week, which we'll dive into, including some footwear on some players, which we just kind of found out about as we were prepping for this podcast. Dante, I cannot wait to get into that conversation. Man, we've been busy playing our own golf too, which we'll get into as well, man. Happy to be back on the podcast after taking a week off for just being two busy men who work regular jobs too.
Regular jobs and playing a lot of golf too. I mean, I know you were playing some Maryland State Open stuff, you know, just some competitions coming down the stretch. And
it's also a good time of year.
Yeah, it really is. And also kind of realizing, like, obviously the outcome that you wanted did not happen, and you kind of really kind of take a step back and realize what you are capable of and what you need to work on. So that's awesome to see. It's awesome to see that, you know, you and I, like, we play the same game. We're at two different levels, but we also still want to constantly get better. And we're just out there grinding away at our day jobs, grinding away on the podcast and Enjoy the Walk. And with the daylight and extending and it being warmer, we're grinding on the range and playing some golf.
I'm telling you what, there's no one out there that can argue us not being in the cut of the game right now. We both compete as often as possible. Like you said, myself living in Maryland, I try and compete in as many Maryland State Golf Association events as possible. I thought it was really funny. Actually, we've had Kelly Newland, the tournament director of the MSGA, on the podcast before, talking about their tournament setups and whatnot. And I did not get to see him before the first tee started, but I saw him on like the sixth hole while we were out there playing. And he joked around because I was actually paired with the old director of the first tee of Baltimore. So he joked around. He's like, man, you guys are the marquee pairing out here. First tee of Baltimore, Enjoy the Walk podcast. And then we had another kind of just long-term player that's been around the MSGA for a long time. So he joked around a couple times throughout the day, calling us the marquee group. And man, I felt like it for the first 12 holes. I don't know if for those who don't follow my personal page, I posted about it there. I played 12 holes of really good golf, had it to one under or two under, I'm sorry, two under through 12. And then the wheels on the bus fell off and off and off and off and off. And I didn't make a par or birdie the rest of the day. It was bogeys and worse the rest of the day, which if anyone knows tournament golf, it's a different beast, and it kind of snuck up on me. And I had one of those weird, I was telling Isaiah about this when I was practicing yesterday. And for those of you who don't know, I'm talking about Isaiah Logue. We've had him on the podcast, you know, as we first started this journey with Enjoy the Walk. But I was talking with him on the range the other day. I was like, dude, I literally blacked out. Like hole 13 through 16, I just don't remember making that many bad swings. And then all of a sudden I get on the tee on 17 and I'm like, what the F just happened? Like, where did that come from? I just made two doubles and a triple and I'm all of a sudden six over par, you know, it's like, holy smokes. So yeah, good experience. Maryland State Golf Association always puts on a phenomenal, you know, venue. Prospect Bay was in phenomenal shape. They just opened semi-private now as well. So anyone in the Maryland area looking to get out and play a really kind of unique golf course, old style, not that long, extremely tight and tree lined on the back nine, go play Prospect Bay. It's in phenomenal shape right now. But, you know, on to the next one is the way I can kind of treat it. I don't know, played 12 holes of really good golf that I could take a lot of good things from. You know, you can't focus can't focus on the bad things, or you'll really get yourself down in this game.
I guess you could say the revelation you had is to play more tournament golf. You know, you can compete. We've discussed this off camera and off recording is, you know, like, would you say, like, you can't keep yourself on cruise control. You just got to, you know, keep the foot down on the gas and just keep going.
It's one of those things where, you know, you're in like a qualifier. And I don't know why I've never had this revelation before. And again, this is just Isaiah and myself talking, but it's like, you know, you're at a point where you're in, right? At like two under, you're thinking, all right, like, let's just, if we could cash out now, right? Like if you're at a poker table and you were at $2,000, $3,000 up, and you say, all right, let's just, you know, take my chips and run. Like if you could do that through 12 holes, it'd be a completely different game, but obviously golf's not that way. And you can't get in the mindset of saying, all right, I'm there. Let's just hopefully lock it in, cruise control, and go from there, because that's when you get lackadaisical and you make mistakes. Isaiah kind of made a comment to me. He's like, just, you know, you should always be chasing the course record, especially when you're on fire like that and you're making three birdies in four holes. There's no reason why your mind shouldn't be on just absolute, you know, gas, like you said, gas on the pedal to the metal and all gas, no brakes pretty much. But it's tough to do that when you know you're in a position where you almost want to guard it and just finish it two under and get the hell out of there.
Yeah, I guess you could say that can be a big part is the mental side of thing too. It's you're thinking, oh, all right, we're at a good spot. Let's see if we can hold off on that. And then you start steering shots, and then now you're like, oh crap, I'm getting myself in trouble. I'm getting myself in trouble. And next thing you know, you're going home. You're not advancing. Yeah. Or you have to, like, I guess you say, train your mind to keep chasing. But I guess you can say keep chasing conservatively in a way, but aggressively.
It's such a weird time. Like, you know, catch 22, isn't it? Like we talked about before we hopped on the podcast, and I think a cool, you know, thing we'll talk about going into the PGA Championship recap too is the way tour pros attack pins, or the way they maybe don't attack pins as much as you think they do. And you know, that kind of got into the conversation of like, well, 130 in, you should be pin seeking. 150 to 180, 190, you should probably be just looking at a quadrant of the green, or even just looking at the center of the green, not even looking at quadrants at that point, and just hitting centers of greens. You'd be surprised how quickly you just can two putt for par from there instead of having to rely on the short game. And it was a big revelation to me of like where your mindset needs to be as well, because obviously if you're playing 12 holes of golf and you've got it to under par in a tournament setting, the mechanics are there, right? Like it's the mental side of things that may have lacked for me on the way down the stretch. So big learning experience, man. It was, I'm excited to get into another tournament. We were talking about it before too. I'm probably not in anything other than maybe the mid-am as far as Maryland State Golf goes, since I didn't qualify for the AM or the Open, but Delaware State Golf Association might see myself in the mix, as well as you. Maybe we'll convince.
Yeah, I mean, you to it's as well. It's funny how small Delaware is, but how close some of the courses are on the northern side of things. Mm-hmm. And even, I mean, we discussed me coming down the Ocean City, Maryland. I mean, it's what, 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours. That's nothing.
Yeah,
and then you kind of have Delaware just kind of like right in the mix, right in the middle, and then you have this association that host these great tournaments at these phenomenal courses, both North Delaware and Southern Delaware. And yeah, I'm thinking about considering, why not give it a shot? Because I mean, we discussed like your game, you know where you're at, like, you know, you can pass these qualifiers and getting into these championships by just having the games there, the swings there. It's like more of a mental side of thing. Mm-hmm. And for me, I want to get myself to be able to know where I can go and compete, knowing I can contend to get myself into the, you know, past the qualifiers. But now for me, I think I just need to start playing more and to get myself exposure. And I think you and I both agree. We had Jake Hutt on the show too. And it says, and one of the comments he said is like, well, why do I play such great golf on the weekends, but I play such crap on, and when it comes to tournament golf, he says, well, how many tournaments are you playing a year? I don't know, maybe one to two. And he goes, well, that's why you're not playing enough tournament golf. In order to excel and succeed and do well in tournament golf, you have to play tournament golf. Like, you can't just go out and play a money round with your buddies and expect to go to the tournament the next day and shoot lights out and make it to the championship. You have to set yourself up.
Yeah, and I mean, whether it's local tournament golf, whether you're playing in like your inner club matches, right? Like we talked about before the podcast too, the club I'm at, Glen Riddle, down here in Berlin, Maryland, we have inner club match play, we have net match play, gross match play, we've got inner club, you know, two-man events. Like, get yourself in events, whether it's inner club, whether it's state events, whether it's, you know, local amateur events, like the county level or whatnot. get yourself in as many competitive level events as possible, because it's a different game. It's different than smacking back six beers with your buddies on a Saturday afternoon and playing that kind of golf that really doesn't mean anything. And if you want to compete and get better, that's where you get better, because there's no other scenario like it. Like, even if you're playing for 10 bucks with your buddies, it's not the same as teeing it up with someone you really don't know. Or even if you are familiar with a person, teeing it up with getting your name announced on the first tee and knowing that there's just a completely different atmosphere the entire day. You can feel it.
You can feel it, just sense it. And it's just a different focus that you get yourself in. And sometimes where the trouble lies is you lose that focus, mm-hmm. and you think way too ahead rather than trying to stay in the moment and stay for shot for shot. But at the same time, knowing that, you know, you're playing and, you know, everybody's out there and they are just so focused on themselves. It's not like it, I mean, you know, I've done it too, that the rounds are quiet. You kind of keep to yourself. It's, you don't really have, I mean, here and there you do, you don't really have much, you know, chit chatting around, talking to people, you know, the NBA or talking about some other sports, or coming down, like talking about the PGA and talking about Phil Mickelson, or, you know what, with just current events. You're not talking about that. You were just in a zone, tunnel vision, and you're just walking up and down the fairway, and you're just focusing on that shot. It's tough to do. It's tough to do for a four and a half to 5 hour round, because you know these tournaments are a lot longer than your simple out with your buddies match, you know, riding around.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that I, you know, as we get into the summer here, it's almost June, my Lord, this weekend coming up is Memorial Day. So stoked for that, to kind of just get out and probably be on the beach down here and let loose a little. But yeah, it is full on tournament season all of June. Maryland State Golf Association, Delaware State Golf Association, locally for us, your GAP events. I'm sure there's some Pennsylvania GAP events you can probably get into as well. There is a full schedule from here on out through August and September if you want to play tournament golf. So it's full force from here on out. There's member guests coming up in July, June and July. You know, there's just an incredible amount of golf if you want to go play golf on the docket here the next couple months. So super excited about it. Obviously, PGA Championship this past weekend. We are officially in major championship season. Obviously, Augusta kicked us off. But this warm weather weekend, it was warm up here, it was warm down in Kiowa. I feel like when the PGA Championship hits now, since they've moved the schedule and it's not the last major of the year, but it's the second major of the year, this for me feels like finally we're full-fledged middle major season. You know, now right after this, you've got the U.S. Open in a couple weeks, but what a great way to basically bring on the second major of the year, then go down to Kiowa, classic Pete Dye design, basically six holes into the wind and the other 12 or whatever back with the wind, or vice versa, however the wind's playing. Really cool kind of just out and back design. And it did not disappoint this week.
No, and I'll be honest, out of all the majors, this is fourth on the list in wanting to watch. Obviously, fair. we have Augusta. All right, we have the Masters. That's numero uno. And then the Opens they're obviously kind of equal. It's a toss-up. Obviously, I'm still on the fence of which one I would pick over the other, but they're two and three, and then it's PGA. But I think, like before, so you had the Masters. Back in before they moved the PGA, you had the Masters, U.S. Open, the Open, and then the PGA. Mm-hmm. And I think once those three were finished, the PGA just got overlooked. It was like, it's just another major, what's so whatnot. Yeah. I still feel a little bit like that. I mean, but I do say this was exciting. This was awesome to watch. I didn't watch a ton of it, but I watched the best parts.
Yeah.
I think the main parts to watch, but I mean, it was something else. I mean, it obviously was a history making week.
Well, let's talk about it, right? With being one of the longest courses on record, actually the longest major championship course on record, playing over 7,800 yards, we had the oldest man, one of the oldest men in the field, win it. We had the oldest winner of major championship golf of all time win it. On a course that was specifically designed back in 1991, like we said, by Pete Dye, to be the host of a Ryder Cup event. Like, that's what it was made for. It was made for tournament golf. It was made for highlight reels. It was made to challenge the British in no way, you know, any other course did at the time in the late 1990s, which that Ryder Cup went on to be War by the Shore, which is one of the most iconic Ryder Cups of all time. This course has a historical fashion of creating historical moments in golf, not only just, you know, with the golf course itself, but just with the people who end up winning championships there, which leads me into saying it's kind of fitting for Phil to be the oldest winner at this course specifically. And you know, I want to dive into it. Like when it got to Friday evening and he was winning after two rounds, I feel like the vibe was, well, that's cool. Like headed into the weekend, what a cool story it would be, but that really can't happen. Can it? Like, I feel like that was the vibe we were getting after Friday evening. And then to head into the weekend and to just kind of see him never waver was really something to see.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he had his foot on the gas, and especially that one front nine. I'm assuming it was the Saturday round, right?
Yep. First round, first nine on Saturday. Punched the gas.
Yeah. I think four birdies, all the rest pars. Just cruising. I mean, yeah, he hit some errant shots, but hit one out of the bunker. Oh, I saw that. He hit this full shot out of the bunker. It was like this cut, and it just hit the green and like checked up, and he was basically tapping range almost for birdie. Insane shot. Then, you know, plays a few other holes, gets to the next, get himself into like a greenside bunker, chips in, bunker shot.
Yep.
In the hole, birdie. I mean, it was fist, you know, the typical fill by the, no Tiger fist pump, but the Phil fist pump, where it was just that little like bump with his left hand right by like his hip.
Well, and it's something you see, right? Like he kind of really built the lead because of the short game. But I think the reason he won, and it's like classic Phil, but it wasn't classic Phil this week. He didn't have to hit these incredible short game shots to win, because his ball striking was just so impeccable all weekend long. He didn't have to rely on these crazy bunker shots, these crazy short game shots to save him. He really was just making putts, hitting greens, hitting fairways, and just honestly, the ball striking display, I can only relate it to like major championship golf for him, was back to when him and Henrik Stenson dueled down the stretch in the Open Championship.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only other thing I can relate it to, because that was a ball striking display. But since then, we haven't seen that from Phil Mickelson. Anytime he's since then, it's been because of incredible short game shots.
That and the fact that watching this weekend, he was just hitting. He was putting everything pretty much in the right spot. He was playing from tee to green, just absolutely smart. Obviously, you know, Phil was loving to hit high, nasty bombs. But it just seemed like he kind of took that out of the picture. He didn't really talk about that. I mean, he just played Phil Mickelson golf, but to like a higher level of Phil Mickelson golf. I mean, he did, like you said, the ball striking was impeccable. I mean, he was hitting drives great. I mean, he was just playing the right shots at the right time and putting it in the right spot on the greens and on the fairways and all that, and just set himself up to score.
Well, and you talk about him loving to hit high, nasty bombs and kind of not relying on it. It was incredible to watch, though, playing with Brooks Koepka on Sunday, who's one of the longest hitters on tour. There were multiple times, almost half of the round, if not more, where Phil was busting it by Brooks by a 15, 20-yard margin. Now, I know Brooks kind of struggled down the stretch and probably wasn't hitting the most solid impact of drives down the stretch, but Brooks is still a bomber, and he's one of the best on tour to do it. So to see Phil at 50 years, almost 51, next month he'll be 51 years old, hitting it this hard and this far at 50 years old, it's just, I would struggle to see anyone else at his age doing that right now or in the next 10 to 15 years. The way he's transformed himself has been incredible.
Especially you said that, and that's what I was going to say. And the saying's funny when they say age is just a number, because it really is. I mean, it becomes a mindset. Obviously, Phil finally took notice of his health throughout the years and realized, I'm going to focus on my mind and my body. My game can already, you know, does enough for itself. Obviously, he's going to progress, you know, in the right direction with his game and continue to get better.
Yeah.
But the remaining focus and the most of the focus, I'm saying like 90% of the focus was, I'm going to start eating better. I'm going to start exercising. I'm going to start, you know, mentally training. I think he's doing some Zen training, and all three of those just kind of like, if you put all the pieces together with that, it's just like, it's not going to really matter. Mm-mm. How old you are. I mean, he's hitting six irons 200 yards into 30 mile hour wind.
To put it in perspective,
50 years old, who cares?
It's insane. To put it in perspective, he tweeted back out when the last, I guess, big championship was at Wingfoot. This was in September 14th of 2020. He tweeted out, he said, last time I was at Wingfoot, I was 36 years old with no accountability for my health. And he tweeted this kind of like left and right photo. And the left photo is him at Wingfoot at 36 years old, looking incredibly hefty, incredibly overweight. And then a picture of him on the right side now. And he looks like 26 years old in the right photo at 50 years old. And he looks 50 plus on the left photo. I mean, the stark difference between his health now to what it was back then almost makes you think, you know, everyone has the talk, oh, if Tiger wasn't around, Phil'd have 10, 20 majors, yada, yada. I think, and this is just hypotheticals here, if Phil cared as much about his health as he does now when he was 36 years old, he'd probably have at least 10 majors right now. I feel like alone, the fact that he has more endurance now to get himself down the stretch on a Sunday afternoon than he did when he was 36.
Speaking of endurance, look at the stuff he puts in his coffee.
Dude.
I mean, you get the Phil's coffee blend. Now, granted,
anybody starting their day with this blend we're about to go in has to be setting themselves up for success.
I'm not a coffee drinker, and I'll explain why. I mean, I love the smell of coffee, but for some reason, I can't get used to the taste. I'm not a really big on hot drinks. I always burn myself, so I always get myself in trouble. But I'm not one for hot drinks. But I mean, this might, you know, I might have to give it a shot. I mean, he drinks 12 to 16 ounces of coffee. He drinks a Ethiopian blend, 2 to 3 tablespoons of XCT or MCT oil, a teaspoon of cinnamon, heaping scoop of collagen protein, tablespoon of honey, dash of Himalayan salt, small glass of almond milk, and 200 milligrams of something I can't even pronounce.
Theanine, I'm guessing, theanine? Is how you say that, which is probably way off too. Theanine? But we talked about that specifically, right? That's that last ingredient, I feel like, is kind of the oil that keeps it all together. You know, when
that's
you talk
MCT
about
tea oil.
Yeah.
When
you talk about what it does and the benefits, mm-hmm, of those two ingredients alone, it's the ability to kind of not get hungry throughout the rest of the day. It's appetite management. It's, you know, the ability to kind of burn a little bit more. There's some fat loss ingredients in there that helps you
energy
burn.
Boosters.
Yeah. There's so many great ingredients. Tablespoon. When I was training for a marathon, the number one thing that people told me to really rely on, especially on long runs, is literally just little packets of honey. Like, I would go to the Royal Farms and get the little disposable packets of honey and just squeeze them into my mouth as I'm like running down long stretches, because honey is supposed to really help you in like long distance or like long endurance battles with yourself, basically, because it's a quick shot of sugar and a quick shot of kind of longer lasting, like soaking into your body of good energy. And it's natural energy. It's healthy energy. It's not like this fake processed stuff. So, mm-hmm, honey is so good in there. And I mean, there's just so many cool ingredients. I feel like the cinnamon might be the only thing that's in there, probably just for taste. But every other ingredient in this coffee is just monumental in setting yourself up for a good day. And he says this is how he starts every day. Not just tournament rounds. It's how he starts every day.
Every day. I mean, it's amazing what he has done over the years, when you just, and anybody can do this, is like, even with you with 75 hard. I mean, you look, if you go to his personal page and you look at the before and after, I mean, it's a culture shock. I mean, if you put your mindset to it and you really buckle down, it's amazing what the body can do and change went from like the bad habits that you have and what bad stuff that you put into it. And you just make a flip of the, like flip of the switch is like, you know what? I'm not liking how I'm feeling. I'm not liking the way I'm looking. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, but I'm going to stick to that regimen and give myself some time. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a few months for you to start seeing stuff. But if you stick with that, it's amazing how great the long-term effects are going to be.
And it's crazy too, right? Because like before, a quick tangent on a workout podcast, I guess we are now. Just like talking about how I felt beforehand. I didn't feel horrible beforehand, right? But like you said, you kind of look, you sit back after doing the 75 days. And this is the biggest thing that I like kind of took away from it. You sit back and you look at person A versus like person now. And it's like, I didn't feel horrible back then, but it is. It's night and day how I look now and how I feel now. It's like sometimes you don't even realize that you're kind of a little bit more out of shape than what you are. And I feel like, you know, relating this back to golf, when Phil was like, you know, 26, 36 and kind of getting a little hefty, he probably had a lot of people around him saying, well, Phil, it's okay. Phil, it's okay because you're still winning. You know, you're still contending. You don't need to work out like everybody else. You don't need to be in the gym like everybody else because this is working for you as it is, right? Like he probably had a lot of people in his inner circle that were more yes men, yes women, and saying, Phil, you don't need to be, you know, in the gym every day, busting your butt. You're fine the way you are, right? And it probably led to a little bit of, I guess, elongated progression for Phil, if you think about it, like, right? Like how good could he have been if he was truly working out like Bryson does now, or like Rory did, even when he really made a push to become physically fit. Like, and now, I mean, Phil himself made a massive push and still does every day to be physically fit now. Like,
I mean,
it makes you think like, how good could he have been?
That and the training he does now, he likes to play anywhere from 36 to 54 holes a day, just so he can have the strongest mental game going into when he plays 18 holes, and 18 holes feels like it's a jog around the house.
Basically, and I couldn't have thought of a better way to do this. Like you said, when you were playing all the time, 36 just became easy. And like when I was playing a lot of college golf, like on the weekends, 36 is what we did. Like that was just standard and we walked it, right? Like it wasn't like we rode it either. So I just think there's so many incredible key elements, you know, to what Phil's doing behind the scenes. It makes it seem like, oh, up front, holy crap, he's 50 years old. He won. He's the oldest ever. I'm telling you right now, and I'll go on the record saying this, this will not be Phil Mickelson's last major championship.
No.
And here's why I say this. We've seen guys in the past compete and almost win major championships at the age of 58, 59. Jack Nicklaus is famous for contending at the 1998 Masters at age 58. Tom Watson just in 2009 contended at the Open down the stretch at age 59. And neither of those guys were in half the physical shape that Phil Mickelson's in right now.
Yeah. And one of the coolest things he said too is, you know, he's like, after kind of realizing what he did and kind of going back onto what he did, he's like, yeah, that's cool and all, but you know, I hope this inspires people out there to do that. He goes, it may take a little extra work. He goes, yeah, I am older. It may take a little extra work. I mean, you're not going to be like the 18, 20 year old who can just go out, party one night, and the next morning wake up and like nothing ever happened. You go out and shoot lights out, and you're going to have to put the work in. And he did. He put the extra work in, and it, you know, the hard work pays off. We used to say that on the lacrosse field all the time back up in Marywood. Mm-hmm. We would have shirts that said HWPO written right on it. I mean, and it truly shows that Phil Mickelson is one to show that he should get etched under his shirt. HWPO, hard work pays off. He did it, and he's been putting this in for the past few years now, and it's paying off, and he's continuing to do that, and he's going to continue to do that, and he's definitely going to win some A major, like you said, down the road, and he's going to win a few more tournaments. I guarantee you that.
I think I just found the new monogram to get stamped on all my personalized Titleist Pro Vs when I order them every year. Hard work pays off, HWPO. I love that.
You get it stamped on one of your wedges too.
Beauty. Absolutely. I'm all in for that. That it's just so cool, man, to see Phil taking this home. I mean, yes, it would have been really awesome to see Brooks Koepka take it home too. You know, this guy, I feel like, is just built for major championship golf. He doesn't show up at all during the rest of the year, but shows up and balls out at every major championship. I have a major respect for that. And the just emphasis he puts on major championships. It's the Tiger effect through and through with Brooks Koepka, because of how big of an emphasis Tiger put on majors in the past. And Brooks kind of growing up with that mentality, the Tiger mentality, seeing Brooks succeed and almost take this championship home is really cool. Another guy who just is unflappable, and I think will break through one of these times. He seems to be Mr. Top Five at majors in the last decade. Louis Oosthuizen, that dude is one of the most sweetest swings in golf right now.
It was funny. I was actually playing with our group of guys. We went to a different course because there was a qualifier being held at Mont at our main one. And he's like, who do you think's going to win? I said, well, this is Saturday. I said, and we were playing early, so this is even before, like, the Saturday round ended. I said, I would like to see Phil get it done. But I said, don't keep your eyes out for Louis, man. He's my sleeper pick. I said, I'm rooting for Phil, but Louis's going to be my sleeper pick. And lo and behold, I mean, he was up there. So I he'll get one. He'll get one soon.
And I don't know, this might be the all-time long shot. We saw Mr. Harry Higgs post a number in the clubhouse, leader in the clubhouse early morning on Sunday, quoted in saying, I hope for disaster in the afternoon. You gotta love it. I mean, I'd be in the same shoes as him. If I'm posting leader in the clubhouse, knowing what Kiowa can do to guys, you know, and hoping to win my first ever major in my first ever major appearance, I'd be sitting there hoping for a little diabolical back nine for those guys too. I wouldn't want to see anybody fail, but I'd want to see him come back my direction.
And that's something though, like say at one moment you're like, all right, well, I'm getting my experience. I'm playing, you know, a first major event. I'm playing the PGA Championship. I did what I could. It was a good experience to see what I can do. Could I have prepared a little bit more maybe or whatnot? You're kind of just recapping based on the week that you had. And the next thing you know, you play your final round, you go lights out. You're like, oh, shit, I could be in the mix. And now you're enjoying the rest of the day kind of with a little nerves and kind of your gut watching the all day, watching the event. So that kind of must have been like cool and nerve-wracking at the same time. Probably get a little bit of butterflies loose in the stomach, but that must have been great joy to watch. That was just an absolute great Sunday.
I can only imagine if you're Harry Higgs and being the kind of person Harry Higgs is, in one vein, right? Like you want to, you're done for the day. You posted. You want to sit there and probably just start drinking, right? You want to have a few beers, kick it back, relax. But in the same vein, you're only three off the lead. All of a sudden, you can't drink too much because you might in 3 hours from now be set up for a playoff. If guys come back to you. So I had to imagine there's a little devil and angel on Harry Higgs's shoulder as he's sitting there in the locker room of Kiowa and just kind of waiting out the rest of the day.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, that's funny. Yeah, I can see him doing that. Or maybe getting like a nice fulfilling steak dinner that just puts you in like into a big old food coma. And then here you go, you know, get tied up and they're like waking you up. You're like, yeah, you need to go to like the 18th tee. You're in a playoff.
Yeah. Oh, that would be great. And honestly, if you think about it too, and this is a whole nother conversation, but there's a point where if you're tipsy, at least for me, when I'm tipsy, there's a point where I'm just lasered, like free flowing, just an absolute stud golfer when I'm tipsy. And then there's that tipping point where I'm too drunk and it's a shit show. So there's there's a master of balance there.
Yeah, it's like a few drinks to get you that tipsy to kind of keep the edge off to where you're feeling good. And then there's really no care in the world. You're like, whatever, we're just going to go out. And then you have a day. Yeah, I hear you on that one. That would have been cool to see. But, hey, hats off to Phil again for getting it done.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And then the scene just coming, you know, we talked about the watching kind of the last – What's that?
How about the fans being back?
Oh my gosh, yeah, man. There's just no better atmosphere than fans at tournament golf. And like when Rory put it perfectly when saying he couldn't play as good as he does without the fan, you know, he couldn't play well without the fans because he feeds off the fans to play. And it was never more evident than this weekend. From Thursday to Sunday, every putt that rolled in that was over 5 feet long, fans were hooting and hollering, especially down the stretch on Sunday. You could just feel the atmosphere. People were pulling for Phil. Every putt he made, people were going nuts off the charts. There was a point down 18 after he hit his approach shot that I think we lost him for like 10 seconds. We lost him in that crowd. He was gone. Phil was nowhere to be seen. He was just one of the fans for like a good 10 seconds.
Well, Brooks got dinged up.
Did he get dinged up? I missed that.
Oh yeah. He said, I guess they were like recapping on the thing. He's yeah. I kind of got dinged up in the crowd. I guess it kind of reminded me of the time when Tiger won the tour championship.
Yep.
And like Rory's like, they're all like, they close in on everybody as they're walking up to the green. It was like the same aspect. I think that's when it happened. And Rory like ran up in front, and I think they were playing in like threesomes, and he like looked at like somebody. He was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That was like the moment, like that in Tiger effect. And like Phil had that moment right then. I mean, you had all these fans just absolutely cheering for him, and they're just, the security guards just couldn't hold him back, and they were just bombarding. And I think Brooks got real caught up in the back, and I guess they fans were like running over him. I guess he got like cleaned up or something. He said that in an interview.
Well, and we'll talk about another Brooks interview here, which I want to dive into. But before we do that, like just finishing up the talk on Phil wrapping this up, man, it was so cool to see these fans in golf. And I wish they would do this more. Like, you know, the only thing that I could think of that even gets close to it is Tiger Woods at Eastlake when he won the tour championship and all the fans just bombarded him, like you were saying. That was the only thing that ranks even close to what happened at Kiowa. And I think Kiowa might have even been a little bit better because the sun was setting. It was perfect golden hour. You could just tell everybody was buzzing. It was Phil Mickelson.
We came off the year of hell.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone wanted this. Like we wanted this so bad to happen. And it actually came to fruition. Fans were back. It was no issues for them to just storm the court. Per se, storm the field, storm the course, and come inside the ropes.
It was good to see normal again.
It was. It was refreshing. It was needed. Yes. It was a breath of fresh air that almost just like you looked at it and you just could like, like you could just breathe again, right? Like it, you could just
there's
feel like
so
it was,
much
a, it was
tension.
A weight off your shoulders. It was
there's
a weight off your
so
chest.
So much tension throughout the world and just the country and all that. It just seems like that just lifted and just went away. And it was our own happy place.
Go to your happy place.
Go to your happy place.
I love it. It was so good, man. And then just to see Phil hug his brother, you know, the journey those two have had from his brother coaching out at Arizona State and actually leaving the head coaching job to come back and caddy for Big Brother. I mean, just what a cool scenario. Epic way to wrap up the PGA Championship onto the U.S. Open out at Torrey Pines. Really sad we won't see Tiger Woods there as a defending champ at Torrey Pines. He's the last guy to win out at Torrey Pines for a U.S. Open back in the historic, I think, kind of iconic broken leg win, the duel with Rocco Mediate. But it'll be interesting to see who paves their way to success out there as well, because Torrey Pines can make boys into men or men into boys real quick, as long as that course plays and as tough as that place plays.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, but I'm not counting out Phil.
I'm not counting out Phil. I'm not counting out Brooks. Mr. Major. He's starting to get that turn very quickly.
He really is. I mean, I know he's coming off of injury and it took him a little bit and hasn't really played much events. And the next thing you know, he's out here and he's contending and he's in the final group. So yes, I'm going this. Let's see how he does in US Open before we really claim Mr. Major to his name.
Well, and let's see too, right? Cause I think we forget, because he played so well this week, he's still battling a knee injury. He said before, I think he said in an interview Wednesday, you know, they asked him if he was hurt And he said, it doesn't matter. It's a major championship. I play to win. I expect to win. Like, that mentality alone is incredible, but it's worrisome in the long term. Like, how bad is the knee and how bad is it truly affecting him? Did it affect him down the stretch Sunday? Brooks is another guy that's kind of like Tiger, where if he truly is injured, he's not going to tell you how bad it is. So I'll be interested to see. Torrey is an extremely long, hilly place compared to Kiowa, that's kind of a little bit flatter oceanside land. So be interesting to see how he plays out there, or the weeks leading up to the U.S. Open, if he even plays from now until then.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I can't wait to see that. I'll be hearing it again sooner than we know it.
Just absolutely. The way
everything's moving.
Well, between you and I, this was one of the funnier moments we had off air before we came on. Brooks was in an after round interview, not exactly sure what day it was, if it was after Wednesday, if it was after Thursday or Friday or whenever, but he was in an interview. I guess it was kind of taped, so it wasn't live, or it would have even been better and I'm sure made the headlines, but it was kind of just, I guess, some editor's cut that got put out on Instagram. He was in the middle of an interview. Bryson started walking by him. He kind of rolled his eyes even before he heard Bryson's cleats hit the pavement. You can tell Brooks is just not a fan of Bryson in the least bit. Bryson walks by him. His cleats hit the pavement. All of a sudden, you can hear the click, clack, click, clack, click, clack of the metal spikes on the concrete. And Brooks just went dead silent in the middle of an interview, stopped his train of thought, completely lost where he was. Just, you could tell the fury that was in him, and it took everything in his power not to turn around and just knock Bryson out cold. You could tell there was that much anger there.
Yeah,
Bryson's still wearing metal cleats. That's a hot topic, and I think a lot of other guys are too, which, when you talk about 4 or 5 days with practice rounds, 6 total, maybe even, of metal spikes on a golf course, where that's really chewing up a lot of real estate over 6 days.
It really is. I mean, it's basically aerifying everything. And God forbid you drag your feet, you're going to have some, luckily on the greens, you can pat it down, but still, I mean, but they banned it. I guess not for the pros. I mean, I don't know that rule.
So loosely cemented, right? Because if you look at every golf course in America,
you and I can't wear them.
No, sir. No, we can't. Even your like high end places that have people that pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to be at a private resort, they cannot wear metal spikes. It is soft spikes only. So the fact that these tour pros still get to wear them at these high end resorts, even if it's just for 1 week, I don't get it. I don't get why the PGA Tour, the US Open, USGA, the RNA, they don't crack down on these tour pros a little more. I get it. These guys are swinging at unbelievable speeds and they're trying to truly optimize their launch and their you know, torque and their push off from the ground. I get that. But if there's, I think one thing we probably all can agree on, especially if it's more than just Bryson wearing it, which I know it is. I know Rory still wears metal spikes from now and then. I know Tiger does. Tiger's on record saying he still wears metal spikes because it gives him the best grip possible. So there's got to be more people than just 2 or 3 guys out there wearing metal spikes. And if you're trying to make putts on Sunday coming down the stretch and guys have the freaking greens tramped up beyond belief on a Sunday afternoon at a major championship, I can see why Brooks is more than aggravated at these guys still wearing metal spikes.
I mean, it just kind of goes like this. Say like you're playing at a tournament and the course isn't up to par. You're all playing the same course. So if the cleats and the metal spikes weren't banned and everybody was wearing it, then it's kind of like, you know, that's on you kind of aspect. Everybody has to deal with the same conditions. But when you have only a few guys participating in that, and it's not the entire field, that's just not fair.
No.
And you're basically giving, and if that guy's in front of you, yeah, I'll be pissed too. Especially when there's a ban on it. But for some reason, like you said, there's no punishment for the pros wearing them.
No. And it's kind of just like, it's almost just like out of mind, out of sight for the guys that are wearing them, because it's not personally affecting them. Or they don't see the wrong in it, I guess. I don't know. It's something where it baffles me to this day, to be honest with you. We're at a point now where we're manicuring greens, we're manicuring places so professionally now. The technology on the agriculture side of things has gotten so good where we can get greens rolling like to a 13 or 14 at these major championship venues if the wind's not too strong and the weather's not in a place where the balls aren't just blowing off the green. These greens can be incredibly fast and just like wild at times. But with that comes extremely smooth surfaces to where if there's even the littlest imperfections, it's magnified times 100, which is what these, I feel like what these metal spikes are doing, right? Like when you were back in the 70s and 80s and greens were rolling maybe an 8 and they were kind of bumpy already. You look at, you look back at footage and Seve and early Jack and early Arnold Palmer, they were playing on some bumpy, shitty greens compared to what the guys are playing on today. So spikes didn't matter as much back then. But when you have an entire industry that's on soft spikes pretty much, and you've got these outliers still wearing metal on these incredibly manicured greens, it makes a big difference. And I'm sure pisses off the field as a whole.
I wouldn't disagree on that one.
Well, speaking of pissing off the field as a whole, I think we would have pissed off the field as a whole playing out there at Kiawah this week. We were joking around. I was inputting a score into the gin system earlier before the podcast. And we got to a situation where you were saying, hey, look at your handicap and what it would be adjusted out at Kiawah. And so we dove into that. And I want to talk about that, talk about what you think we might have shot playing out there for 18 holes. And just to preface this, I'm a plus 1.9 right now. My lowest ever handicap last summer was at a 2.3, a plus 2.3. So, I mean, what do you think you would have shot, Dante? My adjusted handicap out at Kiawah is a 4. So that's a 6-stroke difference of what think I might shoot out at Kiawah.
Honestly, for the listeners, this is from the championship tees. This is like the tournament setup.
It's right where the pros played.
Right where the pros played. 7,800 yards, 30-mile-an-hour winds. I'm sitting right now at a 5.7 index. If I were to play those tees, I would be playing off of a 15.
Mid-double digit.
Yeah, if I was able to shoot 100, I'd probably be happy with in those conditions and that length.
I'm telling you what, I think I could break 80.
You think you could break 80?
I think I could break 80. It'd be close. It'd be a 79.75, but it'd be close.
Yeah, I think what would probably hurt is just knowing where to put the ball off the tee and just dealing with the wind.
Well, that's the way, like they talked about it all weekend long. And I think this was really pivotal too. I don't know the stats. I didn't look at like anyone run the stats, but if you look at it and you were playing off of, like, if you were starting off the number 10 tee on Thursday and Friday, you were playing 9 consecutive holes into the wind before you encountered a downwind hole. Versus if you were playing on the first hole, you played your first 6 holes downwind. Then you made kind of the circle coming back and started playing into the wind. That's a big mental difference to start out in downwind conditions versus starting out just getting battered and bruised into the wind for 9 straight holes. That does a lot to your mental. And I feel like I would love to run the numbers and see what actually happened, but I feel like a lot of people that started off on number 10, you know, one of the days that it was into the wind or whatever, they struggled and might not have made the cut. I feel like that might be what happened to Dustin Johnson. I feel like he might've got the short end of the stick on some bad tee times. And that's just golf. That's major championship golf. That's why I love that they play these championships at courses, you know, especially the Open Championship, where the 1 minute it can be sunny and 65 and the next it could be almost snowing and 35. Like, that's why I love where they pick these venues, because at any time the weather can turn and make these championships just brutal.
It's kind of like your luck of the draw, but at the same time, it's how do you win with that hand that you were dealt? And I think that's what the beauty of these championships are like.
Yep. Absolutely. I love it. That's just a little insight into what our fixed handicaps would be on Kiawah from the championship tee. So little fun homework project for everyone. Go see what your handicap adjustment would be at some other major championship courses. Maybe even like Torrey. Torrey Pines, where the U.S. Open's held this year. But I think that's just about everything it from us this week, guys. As always, you can go to www.enjoythewalkpod.com to check out more from us, the latest blogs, the latest merch drops. We do have an exciting merch drop coming up here soon, so we'll let you in on that on the next podcast, so be on the lookout for that. As always, you can go to @enjoythewalkpod on Instagram and Twitter to check out on our latest posts, see where we're playing at, and just see our latest takes on the golf world, the golf industry, and checking in from wherever the pros are playing next, as well as wherever the next big golf story comes from. So that's it from us this week, guys. As always, get out there, carry your clubs, enjoy the walk.
One shot.